This is Kate Magruder with Promise of Paradise, Back to the Land, Oral Histories of Mendocino County. Something happened here about 50 years ago when hundreds of young men and women streamed into the hills, valleys, and coastal areas of this county looking for a place to create new ways of living. We've been interviewing these folks to find out why they came, what they did, and how it affected them and this place we call home. In the next half hour, we'll be hearing excerpts from conversations I had with Sheila Rogers and Jamie Roberts. Sheila left a lasting legacy in the county through her work with West Company, a Mendocino County business incubator, one that has launched a generation of women breadwinners. I asked Sheila to tell us about her upbringing and her early jobs working with women, and how those experiences led her to Mendocino County.
I was born in Windsor, Ontario, in the Great Lakes region, and it was in 1942. I was raised in a time when, you know, you grew up and you got married and you had children and that was it. And I was maybe one of two of my graduating high school class, which was small. It was a small class, like less than 100, but who hadn't done that, had gone in the Peace Corps instead. And, you know, and in the Peace Corps, certainly, in the Peace Corps, I will tell you that I worked primarily with women artisans who had products that they made and at the time sat beside railroad stations where one train came by a day trying to sell their wares. And there was a project that I was associated with in the Peace Corps that was trying to help market those Ecuadorian craft products out of Ecuador. So I worked with that project. So I worked with women, and I worked with very low-income women. And you can imagine it was, you know, a society that was not used to women being the breadwinners. So I had that in me, understanding them and appreciating how much they appreciated opportunities to have another life besides their family life, to have something that they did and income coming from it. So when I went to Chicago, I also worked with low-income neighborhoods, not so much on merchandising, but on education and children's programs and alternative education. It was a community organization. And again, it was African-American and Puerto Rican primarily, and it was low-income families. And also in New York City, I had worked with the daycare programs and visited often single women, single mothers who were trying to raise kids and have a job at the same time. So I became very appreciative of the plight of women. And it's not as if I was saying I have to do something about this. It's just that I kept getting those kinds of jobs. So when West Company was getting framed, I wasn't there at the very beginning where hundreds of women gathered to figure out something that would be this West Company. And I had just gone off to graduate school to do some training in international development, and I thought I was going to end up moving around the world. I had met Steve, and I really didn't want to leave the area. And so I was working for Real Goods. Having worked there before, I went back and I was working for Real Goods again. And I had a friend who kept calling me and saying, Sheila, there is this thing. It's called West Company. It is your perfect combination. It's about women's business and it's about low income and helping people out of poverty. And that was my two things that I had been learning to integrate and cared about. And I kept saying, that's not what I want to do. I studied international development. And she would call me every once in a while and she would say, you got to try this. You're the right one for it. So since she wouldn't let up, I decided to just go ahead and, you know, apply and do the interview. And I can still see myself in that interview with a couple of people that I knew and a couple of people that I didn't know. And a couple of hours later, I got a call saying, we want to hire you. So I guess they had decided, too, that I was the right person. It wasn't natural. I mean, it was.
How did that shape you, that job?
The job was to build an organization that would provide an alternative for women to gain some income, an alternative to low-wage jobs. I mean, and that's kind of what was available to a large extent. There weren't any good-paying jobs. And it was working with women, some of whom were educated and some of whom were great artists, but they weren't making it. My job was, I mean, we had a 4-year grant from a private foundation to build this thing. And the design was already in play because the design was the application for the funding to do this. And so it involved, you know, being able to help them write a business plan, being able to help them learn what marketing was, how to read their financials, how to do all of those things. So my job was to get the right people in place to teach them those things and to then be innovative, because West Company was one of several brand new idea companies. They weren't even called microenterprises at the time. They were called self-employment organizations. But there were a few that had popped up, one in Minneapolis and one in Chicago. And so there were a few like mothers, if you will. But then along came this secondary group, and West Company was part of that. One of the very exciting things was that our funders knew about helping us learn, helping us about, like, learn from each other, the peer, you know, learning thing that could happen. So they brought us together on a regular basis and allowed us to, you know, run. We tried this. Have you ever tried that? Did that work for you? You know, lending programs, circle lending programs, kinds of innovations. And our funders, who were primarily private funders, really wanted us to innovate and really wanted us to come up with new models and find out what would work and what would work in a rural area versus what would work in an urban area. Well, West Company is a founder of the National Trade Organization for Microenterprise Development and one of the four founders of CAMEO, which is the California Trade Association, because we were the pioneers. So for me personally, it was so exciting because I love to travel and I was meeting these really smart women who were trying new things. You know, women from all walks of life too. That was the other thing. So it was just powerful and wonderful and loving, and we were all learning and, yeah, making our mark. I came to Mendocino County in 1972 out of the Bay Area. I had previously lived in Ecuador as a Peace Corps volunteer and in New York and in Chicago. And in Chicago, I had met a man who had also been a Peace Corps volunteer in Ecuador. And we ended up deciding that we wanted to try California. We came to Mendocino County because there was another Peace Corps volunteer who had been in Ecuador at the same time we were, George Rao. And we came up to visit him and his wife, Estella.
This is Kate Magruder. We've been listening to my interview with Sheila Rogers, who came to Mendocino County during the Back to the Land era. Besides Sheila's work with West Company, we also talked about her early days here and the spirit of the times, how it was possible to find a job and a place to live, sometimes in the same afternoon, and maybe even your life's sweetheart. Let's get back to my interview with Sheila Rogers.
I may or may not known that I wanted to come to an out-of-the-way place when I came to Mendocino County. My childhood really was about a lot of open space, being in the Great Lakes region, and our vacations were always in wild places, and I grew up with backyard gardens. Everybody had backyard gardens, and so that was a way of life for me. In the Peace Corps, it was very different, and I became used to living without a lot of conveniences, like a telephone in my own house or my own car, any of those things. So I was ready for something simpler. And at the time that I came up here, I was with a man named Bill. We had decided that we wanted to leave the Bay Area. It was just too busy for us. It was too urban. And he had been raised in Chicago. We both decided that we were going to move to either New Mexico or Oregon. And Oregon was closer, and we had this one friend who lived here already, who we had been visiting previously in previous months. So we were on our way to Oregon, actually. We had been camping out in Marin County. And Bill said, why don't we just stop in Ukiah? and, you know, see what that is. So we went to the state hospital. By noon, he walked in there just to see if there were any jobs, and he walked out. I just sat in the car. He walked out and he said, well, there's sort of a volunteer kind of job. I'll get paid a little bit, but I think I want to take it. So it was like 1:30 in the afternoon by then, so we called George and we said, George, Bill got this job today, and we're thinking of looking for a place to live. How do you do that around here? And George said, well, look in the Daily Journal for rentals. There was a rental of a cottage behind a house on Road I in Redwood Valley. And we moved in that evening. So it was, I mean, I can't even say it was deliberate that we moved here on purpose, but it made sense. It seemed like, well, this might be a good place to be. It sounds pretty easy. It seems pretty easy to settle in one day. So that's what we did. That relationship changed pretty quickly. We were here in the spring of 72. By 73, it was really not working that well. We had a regard for each other, but that was not meant to be. And he became interested in somebody else that he had met here in town. And so that really kind of did it. You know, he really wanted to move in that direction. And at first I was sort of like, well, what am I going to do here now? But I went away for 1 year and kept in touch with my friends who were here. When I came back, one of those friends had bought a house and I could move in. And so I became my own person living in Ukiah at that point. Well, my first job was the job as the cook in the Hopland Station. And then actually, when I came back, being gone for the whole year of 1974, moved into the house in Ukiah, and one of my very good friends, who was married to another one of my very good friends, said, you know, there's this new health food store, and you ought to go there and get a job. And because he knew I liked to cook, so he knew I knew about food, and I was interested in food. So he sent me over to the corner store. So I had a job at the corner store beginning in the spring of 75. That owner was building something that hadn't previously been here, and that was a really interesting place to work. I worked there for just a few months, and there was a small counter for sandwiches and stuff like that. But toward the fall, I wanted to go back to New England, where I had a job the previous fall, you know, working in the tourism industry, and so did one of my girlfriends. So I said, well, Rick, I'm gonna leave. I'll be back. I don't know when. And he said, okay, fine. And it was like, whatever, you know, apparently you're making your own choices. And I came back about 7 months later. On March 1st, I think of 76, I walked into the store. He had subsequently hired a man named Steve Beard to run this cafe and grow the cafe within the store. And so he said to Steve, well, this is Sheila, and she used to work here, and she works here again. Steve, as you know, is my husband. So that job also led to, you know, the love of my life. I have been here for more than half of my life. I came here when I was 30, and I'm 76 now. So most of my life has been here. So clearly it works, because I'm not the kind of person that would say, oh, well, I guess I'll just have to stay there because I don't know what else to do. I mean, I live here on purpose. And that's because it's a good place for me to be, you know, no matter at what age and what's going on, all the many things that I've been able to do. I mean, even being a costumer for a local playhouse, imagine that. I never imagined myself getting to do costumes for a local playhouse. But, you know, the opportunities have been so rich and so easily stepped into on a level because of the people who are here, and we get to know each other and we kind of know what each other's specialties are, so that, you know, you can count on that person to do that thing, for instance, and that would be the right person to call since you need help with this. What could be better than that? I mean, that is real community.
We've been listening to an edited interview with Sheila Rogers as part of Promise of Paradise, Back to the Land Oral Histories of Mendocino County. Next, let's hear from Jamie Roberts, who's lived on Greenwood Road, just a few miles from Elk, for more than 40 years. You may recognize his voice as the longtime KZYX host of Radiogram. Jamie tells us how his Back to the Land experience here on the coast all started with a letter to a stranger.
I was born in Chicago in 1948. I went to college in Wisconsin, University of Wisconsin. So I lived in Chicago until I was 18, went to college, and then when I was 21, after I graduated, I moved to California. I don't know, it was the spirit of the time. It was, you know, all the, I don't know, what would you call it, good vibes that were coming from California. It just seemed like I was totally intrigued. That was 71, I think, or 70. I had a van, which I spent the previous summer decking out, you know, with cabinets and oriental carpets, and, you know, it was the perfect hippie little van, and came out to California, and then I spent a couple of years traveling up and down, mostly on the coast, trying to find my place. I lived in San Francisco for a while, I lived in Monterey, I lived in Big Sur, you know, each of those places maybe a few months to a year in each of those places. And then when I was living in San Francisco, I had a roommate whose mother owned some property up here, and we came up here one time to check it out. Like I said, I had been looking for a place, you know, my place to be, and I came up here and I was really taken with Mendocino. And at the time, there was nobody living on that property that we came to visit, Michael's mother's property. I wrote a letter to her and I said, "Mrs. Stobie, there's nobody living on this property. Let me stay here and I will develop it and not have any claim on the property. I'll put in a road, dig a well, you know, maybe build a little cabin. Then you could charge me, you know, some minimal amount of rent." And that worked out. She agreed. And so I lived on that property, which is about 6 miles from here, for 25 years. I had never met her. So this was a cold call, really. I just wrote her out of the blue. She didn't know who I was, except that I was a friend, a roommate, and a friend of her son's. I don't know. She was game. You know, what can I say? She agreed to let me to do that, to live on her land and develop it in a minimal way. I mean, I didn't have that many resources. You know, we dug our wells by hand, and, you know, I built this little shack out of a chicken coop that I had torn down somewhere a few miles away. And it was the first building that I ever built, actually. So, and that started my career as a carpenter, actually. That's how I started learning those skills.
What did you think you were going to do? How did you think you were going to make money when you came, and how did you make money?
I had no idea. When I first came up here, I wasn't sure. I just knew I wanted to be here. I didn't know how I would support myself exactly. But like I was saying, the times were optimistic. You know, there was a feeling that there was enough to go around for everybody if just people would open their hearts and be open-handed and share. So there was a general feeling that you could make things work no matter what.
How did you eat? What were you eating?
Well, there was, what was it, the food bank, or not the food bank, what do they call that? The surplus food program. I forget what it's called now.
Commodities?
Yeah, the commodities program. There was the commodities program, so you always got your big can of peanut butter and your cheese and butter. And then there were always apples to glean. So I survived on apples and peanut butter for quite a bit of the time, you know, until I was able to start working and, you know, be able to buy some groceries. Yeah, the commodities really helped out a lot. Okay, well, when I first moved up, I moved onto this property. I got permission to stay there, but I didn't have any shelter. So the first thing I did was I bent a bunch of redwood branches over and made kind of a little hut and threw a tarp over it, and that worked okay until after about a month of winter, and that got pretty bad. So I broke down, actually, and rented a room in a house down in Elk that first winter. That was pretty brutal. And then the following winter, I got a hold of a pretty good-sized tent. It was about 8 by 16 with a traditional camp tent. And so I found an old barn door for the floor and put this tent on top of it. And I lived in that for about a year or so.
With heat?
Did I have heat? Good question. I don't think... No, I did. I had managed to find a little homemade wood stove. I did have heat there. But you know how tents are in the rain. You know, it starts out where you've got like 8 by 16 feet of platform, and then as the rains progress through the winter, more and more, you know, the dry area shrinks as it goes through the winter, because anything that's touching the tent walls is going to wick water into it. So after a month or so of rain, you know, I was pretty much limited to the size of my bed that was dry, you know. So that was pretty intense. That was pretty brutal. And, you know, at that point, I decided that I really needed to build something, and I got permission to go ahead and build a cabin there. So, yeah.
When you were up here first and living in a tent, what would you do at night?
You mean for fun? Yeah, what would I do at night? I'd go over, walk over, visit a friend, a neighbor. There was always something going on at somebody's house. There were a few friends who were always open-handed, and it was sort of a continuation of, you know, what would happen when I was in college or something. You'd go over and hang out at somebody's house and party, whatever that meant for you at the time. You know, Byron had built a pretty funky hot tub that was always available, and so we'd go hang out. Or I used to drive up to Mendocino or Fort Bragg to go to concerts or to the movies much more often than I do now. If it was cold and damp, you didn't want to hang around the tent, so you'd go see a movie or go out and go do something. Like I said, there was a lot more. There was the Casper Inn. So there, you know, every weekend there was something going on there, and there was always stuff to do. We were young and full of energy and creative energy, so there was always stuff to do. There were lots of festivals. It seemed like there was any that you could have a festival at the drop of a hat. But there were a few ongoing ones that happened every year for several years. They weren't like organizations. It was just these people that had property that were throwing parties. You know, there was one on Albion up on Trillium Lane, I think it was. There was always a party every year there. And of course, there were our house bands, you know, the Cat Mother and that lived in Elk. And you could always expect to hear them. I think I probably heard them play about every other week at least. And they were so good, you'd never get tired of them. You know, they were just great. There was always some kind of festival going on. And then some of those people, you know, Bob Smith, the band leader of Cat Mother, they did some pretty major productions. They did a big thing one year down at Woodlands. They rented the whole place, and they had some pretty top name acts. And I did help out with that a little bit, just worked as a guard at that festival. But that was a major thing. You know, the memorable ones for me weren't the big ones, just the ongoing party, you know. And because Cat Mother lived in Elk, we could always go down and hang out with them. And there was a lot of hanging out going on, of course, you know. That's when I learned how to juggle important skills like that. Elk is a remarkable place that way. And a lot of us have been living together for so long, you know. What I'm trying to say is that one of the most remarkable things happened is that there was enough energy to go around and enough inspiration from all these people making their lives here, and this sense of we're in this together, that there was a community building energy that went on, and we built a community center, and we, you know, created events to support the community center, and that brought in a lot of people, both, you know, hippies and rednecks, to contribute to that. So there was a lot of overflow of energy that went into building a community, you know. a lot of wonderful things have happened in Elk because of that sense of the importance of community. Like, for instance, when the Methodist Council, whatever, decided that they couldn't support the church that was in Elk anymore, it went on the market. And in the normal course of things, it would have become a bed and breakfast or whoever could afford to make it work, you know. And instead, some people that had money in the community came forward, and there was fundraising going on, and the community bought that building, and now it's a community resource. And so things like that would happen all the time. And so that's one of the most beautiful things that I, you know, think of as those times, and it's still going on. When we first came here, there wasn't I don't want to say there wasn't a lot going on. I mean, people had their traditions and their families and everything like that. But culturally, it wasn't a lot going on. And the people that came here, by and large, came from had brought a broader view of the world with them, you know, had traveled or had gone to college or gone to school. And I think we opened up this area to the world a little bit in a way, because we brought the world with us, I guess. But people that came back to the land in the 70s, they have kids, and the kids can't stick around because they don't have any opportunity. I think in the last, up to recently, I think there's been more people that moved here in the 70s. Their kids have had to move away to find their place, you know. On the other hand, I think things are turning around a little bit. I see here in Elk, there are more young families staying. I was just at a wedding recently, and there were dozens of little babes in arms. And I think that maybe, you know, it will find sustainability. I guess that's the word, you know, whether the culture that we've been building here and living, it can be sustainable. I think that's beginning to be maybe more possible than it had seemed, you know, 10 years ago. There's a growing tourism here, and there's certainly thriving building trades. Young people that want to work in forestry or in building, there's employment now. So I'm hopeful that the culture that we brought and the things that have happened since we first came here in terms of shaping our culture will be able to sustain through the next couple of generations. And I'm hopeful because things are changing.
Just heard a little piece from Cat Mother, the iconic Coast house band back in the day. We've been listening to interviews with Sheila Rogers and Jamie Roberts as part of Promise of Paradise, Back to the Land Oral Histories of Mendocino County. This program airs on KZYX at 3:30 on Thursday afternoons. You can also catch shorter excerpts during the news hour on Thursday mornings at 7:45, 8:45, and 6 p.m. They're also on the KZYX website and Facebook page, along with photos and even longer interviews. Promise of Paradise is supported by the National Endowment for the Humanities, California Humanities, the Arts Council of Mendocino County, the Judy Pruden Historical Preservation Fund of the Community Foundation of Mendocino County, the Mendocino Institute, and Grace Hudson Museum.
There's something happening here, but what it is ain't exactly clear.